While it's loading up, just to acknowledge my co-authors, Kathleen Sherman and her students are from the Department of Anthropology at CSU, and they did pretty much all of the work on the survey data, so I'd like to point them out. And my graduate advisors, Keith Poston and Stephen Ogle. Okay, so what is no-till? I think everybody in this crowd pretty much knows what no-till is, but it's a non-tillage method that basically leaves the previous year's residue undisturbed by the time the seed for the next year's crop is planted. There aren't any full-width tillage operations, and the only other operations in the field are for placing nutrients and pesticide and that kind of thing. So why do we care about no-till? Well, no-till has been shown to improve many of our environmental problems associated with agriculture, including reducing runoff, reducing soil erosion, general improvements in soil quality, and then we've also been discussing its potential for carbon sequestration. But of course, the farmer thinks about a lot of other things when they're deciding what tillage type they want to use. They're thinking about economic aspects. Is this going to affect yields? They're going to have to buy new equipment. In the Great Plains, another aspect of no-till is that it generally increases soil moisture, which is probably the single biggest challenge for agriculture in the drier regions of the Great Plains. Some other things, fuel savings. No-till uses much less fuel, and it's also more efficient. So then farmers can use that time that they save using no-till to either increase production, farm more acres, diversify their operation, or pursue other interests. All right, the current picture for no-till adoption, which by current I mean 2004, because this is the most recent data that we have for the whole U.S. You can see the whole picture nationally. Let's see here, where's my cursor? There it is. Quite a bit of variation throughout the U.S. Here I've outlined the Great Plains region, and you can see there are some places with quite high adoption, and then there are others that have fairly low adoption. The national average is 20% in 2004. The Great Plains is a little bit lower than that at 17%. So my objective was to evaluate no-till adoption in this region and see what factors are influencing farmers to adopt no-till. I did this with two approaches. One was doing a regional analysis using county-level statistics that are available through the USDA and some other sources. And then we also looked at a more local level using household survey data. So here's the region here. I delineated the region using USDA land resource regions. So this northern one is the northern Great Plains spring wheat region. On this western side, Great Plains range and irrigated region. And then the southern kind of central portion, I guess, is winter wheat and range. And then you can see these little hatched counties are the counties where we conducted surveys, mostly in South Dakota, Montana, and Colorado. Now, this is a lot of information. I don't expect you to read all this. This just kind of gives you an idea of the types of variables that I wanted to look at. I really wanted to capture the environmental, some of the economic, social, more farm structure and cropping system variables that might be influencing adoption. And I looked at most of these at both the regional and in the household surveys, although you'll notice down here at the bottom in this attitudinal category, none of this data is available at the regional level. And so this is really where the survey data came in. So first, with the regional analysis, the response variable that I looked at was percent no-till relative to total crop area. And I used the crop residue management survey that's conducted by CTIC. The predictor variables came from various sources. There's a few there. A lot of data came from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. And then I also used some soil and climate data from some sources. The method that I used to analyze it was a linear mixed effect model, which for those of you who aren't familiar, it's essentially a linear model, but we define the random terms to account for dependencies between the samples. I evaluated an alpha of 0.05, and there were about 400 counties in my analysis. And here's my resulting model. I didn't bother to put the actual coefficients in here because that's kind of hard to evaluate the meaning of that, but I just put the positive or negative sign. So if it's negative, that means it's influencing no-till in a negative way. If it's positive, it means that it's positively associated with no-till adoption. So I'm going to skip over these first few for temperature. This is mean out annual precip to PET, so it's essentially like a humidity index. Sand percent and slope percent, because for both of these we had interaction terms between the temperature and the humidity and the sand and the slope. And on the next slide I'm going to talk a little bit more about what those interaction terms mean. Going down here we have years on operation. So there was a positive association with years on operation and no-till adoption, which can mean either experience or, you know, they've been on that one particular operation longer, they're more likely to use no-till. I have a negative, sorry, I keep losing my cursor, negative association with total wheat acres. The way I analyzed this variable was I looked at a 10-year average of total wheat acres. This is all types of wheat. And it's because it's averaged over 10 years, I account for rotations. And so basically where wheat is high, it means that it's grown frequently and it's grown extensively. And this was negatively associated with no-till adoption. I also looked at ownership and found that there was a negative association with ownership. So in a county, the higher proportion of full owner operations, there was a lower rate of no-till adoption. And then for the random effects that I talked about, I looked at states and then these USDA districts within states. Okay, so looking at the interaction terms here, what I did just to simplify interpretation of the interaction terms was to basically create a model prediction based on the total regional means. For the interaction terms, I looked at the first and third quantiles to say this is the low value, this is the high value. So in this case, for climate, we have cold versus dry, cold versus wet, warm, dry, warm, wet. And of course, remember these are relative to the Great Plains region, so it's wet is still fairly dry compared to the rest of the U.S. So the highest rate of adoption was in the cold and dry portions of the region, and the lowest was actually in the warm and wet, although these aren't terribly different. When you look at sand content and slope, highest adoption rates were in low sand, high slope counties. So basically, these are finer textured soil and on high slopes, which means they're probably more susceptible to erosion. The lowest adoption was in low sand, low slope. So again, finer textured soils on low slopes. Either there's less of an impetus maybe because of reduced erosion less risk of erosion, I guess I should say, or there could be problems with using no-till from maybe drainage or, you know, some other kind of issue. So then I just decided I wanted to look at my model at the regional level and see if I'm predicting the patterns of adoption reasonably well. And I am predicting the patterns of adoption reasonably well. You can see some of these higher rates up in the northern part of the region compare fairly well. You can kind of see these same patterns throughout South Dakota and down through Kansas here, and the really low rates in the southern portion of the region. However, I underpredicted total adoption by about 7%. And you'll see some of these counties that have rates over 50%. I didn't predict any counties over 50%. So there's something else that is encouraging people to use no-till that I wasn't able to capture in these county-level statistics. So moving on to the local analysis, this is a very different analysis. It's based on these very detailed household surveys that were conducted in farm households in Colorado, Montana, and South Dakota. This was in 2005. We had a total of 70 surveys, and those are in those counties I showed you a few slides back. The analysis method on this, I used a binary logistic regression, so the response is a 0-1 response. Either they're using no-till or they're not. Because I had much fewer studies, I set an alpha level of 0.1. And by the time I accounted for gaps in the data, my model was fit for 41 households. All right, this is a little bit different picture than the regional analysis. So again, I find the same relationship with ownership. So as ownership increases, no-till adoption decreases. The rest of these variables had positive associations. So if farmers enrolled at least some of their land in CRP, they were more likely to use no-till. If they said that they generally trusted the federal government, they were more likely to use no-till. If they used their land for hunting, they were more likely. And in this open-ended question, we asked them about conservation issues in their area and what was their primary concern. And for farmers who listed their primary concern as moisture conservation were also more likely to use no-till. So just to get a sense of how the model prediction for this analysis, what it looks like, essentially with binary logistic regression, what you're really doing is looking at probability. And so what I calculated here are predicted probabilities of no-till adoption. So this is our predictions here. And here I just sort of summarized the data from the surveys. This isn't all of them, but I used the most common responses and plotted them across here to compare how did my prediction line up with their actual no-till response. And for these high levels of responses, we predicted them quite well. You can see for the one responses where they're using no-till, we were in the 90% probability, and where they didn't, we were close to zero. And if you could analyze this a little bit more, look at ownership here for these zero ones is much higher than these that are using no-till. And I think this moisture conservation one is pretty interesting, where farmers who did not say this were much less likely to use no-till than those that did. So then I decided, okay, well, what's similar between these two analyses? They're a very different approach at looking at no-till adoption. And on the surface, there really isn't that much that's similar besides this ownership story that we see here. However, thinking about it a little bit more, you know, this sand and slope percent that we found at the regional level is likely related to erosion mitigation. So farmers in those counties are choosing to use no-till, most likely to reduce erosion, which sort of relates to some kind of conservation ethic. And when you look at the CRP involvement and the hunting, you know, you might be able to say that those things could be related to some degree. And then there's also this climate aspect with temperature and this humidity index. And if you remember right, the way the interaction term came out, the cold and dry areas in the region are the most likely to use no-till. In my survey analysis, these farmers that cited moisture conservation as their primary concern were also more likely to use no-till. So overall, my broad conclusions are that farmers were influenced by their environment, and this is both in a practical sense in terms of the climate variables, but maybe also in a conservation sense, as we saw in the soil and topography variables. In both cases, no-till adoption actually declines with increased ownership. The cropping systems also influence tillage decisions, as we saw with the wheat variable. And so, you know, depending on what is the most common cropping system in that region, which could be for various reasons besides climate or soil type, it could be convention. Like in the southwest portion of the region, they do a lot of continuous winter wheat cropping that they graze, and it's this mixed livestock system. And so they're kind of set in this particular cropping system, and they might be less likely to change systems to accommodate a change in tillage. And then across both analyses, I think there are positive attitudes towards conservation and government increase the likelihood of no-till adoption. And with that, I would be happy to take some questions. Well, it's sort of interesting. So after I got this initial result, before I did the regional analysis, I had done a quick analysis with my survey data and found this, and I kind of thought maybe it was spurious or something because, you know, I have a relatively small data set and, you know, maybe there was just something else going on. And then when I got the same result at the regional level with 400 counties, I thought, well, there's definitely something here with ownership. And looking at the literature, it goes back and forth a little bit, but a lot of the literature on conservation is on conservation practices that are permanent and require investment. And so into your land, you know. So the thing about tillage is it's really more associated with the operator than it is with the owner. And when you buy your no-till equipment, you take it with you wherever you go, you know. So that's part of it. The other part of it, I think, is that a lot of farmers operate on both land they own and land they rent. And so, you know, I looked at, okay, well, if, you know, the farmers that own all their land, is it because they're older or because they're, you know, these other things. But I didn't have age come out as a significant variable. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to decide why it is that owners are less likely to use no-till. It's kind of easier to understand why renters would use no-till, like, you know, because it doesn't really matter to them whether or not they own the land. They can take the tillage equipment with them. It's efficient. They're generally, I did some national statistics on the ownership and found that full owners own more proportion of the land, but they actually operate on less acres. So people who are both owning and renting operate larger farms. Maybe, you know, it's like, but I also tested farm size and it didn't come out as being significant, or operation size. So it's kind of confusing, but it's interesting still, yeah. Anybody else?
How did you decide your household surveys to send to?
Well, it was sort of, it was kind of complicated because there were some other objectives in the project. We were focused on that kind of northern plains region at the time, and so we kind of chose counties that had were neighboring because we wanted to look at relationships between counties, and then we also were looking at ones that within these neighboring counties who had kind of variable rates or variable levels of adoption, and at the time we were also looking at CRP enrollment, and so we were looking at kind of the CRP statistics in those counties as well. And then for the households themselves, they were randomly chosen from phone books, actually. So, and then we had the students that I referred to at the beginning, they actually went out and sat down with the farmers for a good 2 hours or so and conducted the surveys. So while we didn't have a lot of them, they were very in-depth. I'm sure, yeah. Yeah, because they would call people on the phone, and then if the person agreed to do the survey, then they would go visit them, and I'm sure they had a lot of people that on the phone said they weren't interested. Is there another one back there?
I guess if you wouldn't mind me offering a comment to the previous question.
Sure.
And there's work that's been done in the Ag Econ Department of K-State. Part of this deal with ownership is typically farmers that own a higher percentage of the ground have higher equity, and so sometimes do a poor job of splitting out that land ownership and farming are really two separate enterprises. And so they're less sensitive to immediate short-term returns to no-till, like we see in the Great Plains, because it's a moisture yield thing. And so if I'm not explicitly splitting out my land costs, because I own it all, I don't make the effort to split it out, I'm less sensitive to that increased yield as opposed to somebody who's paying cash rent for it. But because it's an explicit cost, respond to that much quicker, and part of that is by improving my yields and moving to no-till. In Kansas, no-till has been a major driver in farm profitability and farm size, and a lot of that comes back to guys recognizing that it's a separate, the guys that don't have so much equity in the business are quicker to recognize that.
So the moisture effect is really short term bank.
Most of the Great Plains, it's more of a revenue side. I mean, it's both cost and revenue, but it's more revenue than cost. And so your land tenants are much more responsive to that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, and this might be, I was also expecting to find more of the economic variables to be significant because I tested various measures of income and assets and things like that. And I didn't find anything. And it could be related to kind of the confusion. You know, the economics might be confused a little bit with this ownership story, too. I don't know. Yeah.
I have one question.
Sure.
Did you look at any way, Cook County and the state as a random effect, but did you look at any ways of breaking that out? And the reason I asked that question, you can see it on the map, so there's an area.
There, yeah.
Mm-hmm. West Central and Southwest Nebraska, that, for example, no-till planting of corn was 10 to 20 years ahead of anywhere south or west of them, and it was because
so I tested as variables a little bit. So Of course, it gets a little confusing when you think about these random effects because, you know, what the assumption behind those is that I'm not assuming that these counties are all independent of each other. You know, and the reason why I didn't assume that is because, you know, I think there are definitely correlations between counties, and when you think about the effect of, like, NRCS offices and stuff like that, and I think that's why the district, which is usually, like, five or six counties grouped or so, came out as being the best, when I compared among random effects, that was one of the best predictors. And so, you know, that's accounting for some of my spatial dependency, but then if I test other variables that also have a spatial component, they might not come out as strong, you know. And so I did test, like, as a categorical variable state, and it didn't come out, you know, but there could be a lot of things that confound that. After I look, you know, looking at some of the results, it does make you think that there are some localized things that, like in South Dakota, too, there's these groups of counties right there on the east side of the Missouri that have over, you know, 60% adoption or something, and I'm not predicting that high of rate. So it could be something like activities by South Dakota State that are increasing. Yeah, that kind of thing. If you could go into a little further and maybe think about some other variables that might be contributing to that kind of sharing of information and that kind of stuff, it could be really interesting. I think there was one more. Okay.